Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric 13, and I could have had a parallel career of making ghost knockoff music for Moral Fortress films with Michael Kester.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that.
Listen, we come on double feature. We try to have analytical conversations.
Yeah.
I want people to know, in my heart, I just want to talk for 49 minutes about making fake Nine Inch Nails music for your documentary, but I'm not going to do that.
Cool.
I pointed it out. That's and good. I made a joke.
Cool.
I probably won't mention it again.
You will.
What are we doing today?
On your references might keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller,
no.
But you will. Sorry.
The whole show.
What are we doing?
30 seconds into the show. It's over already. The whole
thing.
What are
we doing on the show today? We are going to cover a couple of films. We're going to take a look at The Duty of the Machine for the People.
Ooh, fancy.
We're going to do a Laura Poitras documentary that you already mentioned called Risk, which deals with Julian Assange, who thinks he's a robot and above a lot of things, including people. And then we're comparing that with probably, I would say, arguably, debatably, maybe definitively, the most influential anime film of all time, Ghost in the Shell, which is a movie about pretty much the exact same thing as Risk, only it's animated. And we're going to spoil both of these. The Risk one, spoiler, you already know what happens, but Ghost in the Shell is highly spoilable, although I would argue that the available spoilers are not the important aspects of the movie. So if you want to avoid what happened in real life and just skip over to Ghost in the Shell, which I wouldn't blame you for, that'd be like half-ish way through. So like we say the number 24 just because it makes people feel better to like randomly grasp at an integer.
24 is the new chapter.
But it has absolutely zero influence on when things switch over. So it's also totally possible that if you jump to the 24-minute mark, that will be the height of the spoilers on Risk, which is that Donald Trump wins the presidency. So there you go.
24 minutes plus or minus the standard deviation of Nine Inch Nails references.
Right.
If we've hit enough of them, we add some time. If we, well, I think this goes the other way. Doesn't matter.
Right.
It's not true.
Sure.
Anyways. I wanted to tell people they don't know about this. This is a brand new thing for some people and a very old thing for other people. We have a Patreon.
Double feature. Oh.
Yeah. Double feature. Welcome to Double Feature. This is
we do have a Patreon. That's where Double Feature comes from now.
So if you want more political asylum double features, what a weird fucking thing that's happening today. I cannot wait to talk about these two movies and talk about them together. That makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm.
You can head on over to patreon.com/double feature. And on there, you can get all the old shows we've done, which includes Citizen 4, which I think will definitely get referenced. I think if I somehow skip Citizen 4, then I'm skipping stuff that I don't want to. So
I mean, Citizen 4 is actually in this film.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Well, maybe that's a good place to start. I'm held political prisoner right now by the fact my mouse ran out of battery. So if the show is weird,
yeah, it's just as bad. It's just as bad as these other guys. Maybe worse because they had computer access.
They did. They had USBs. And
also, how do you just have the phone number to like Hillary's campaign?
I mean, well,
you Google it.
One, I want to say it is WikiLeaks. If anyone's going to have the phone number to Hillary Clinton's campaign,
it's true.
Come on now. Come
Fair
on.
Fair point.
If
Fair
I
point.
Needed Hillary Clinton's phone number, I'd call WikiLeaks.
Where'd you get that though? Where does that number come from?
My contacts in Afghanistan, not the country you thought I was going to say, was it?
Nope.
No,
you got me.
But it was. My contacts in Hong Kong. So let's start with Citizen 4, actually, because that's a thing that I don't know how important it is, but definitely sets a context for, you know, if you just say WikiLeaks, I don't know if people have a timeline of what the fuck that is.
Sure.
Or how that happened or how it involves all this other stuff.
Or why it sounds like it's named after Wikipedia in some way.
Or Lemmywinks.
Lemmywinks.
That's the real question we want to bring up on our show, but let's go with Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
I have the technical expertise to solve that. That's because Wikipedia is based on the technology known as a wiki, which is crowdsourced information, specifically a crowdsourced index by word, an encyclopedia, right? So Wikipedia became the most popular...
Encyclopedia-pedia.
No, that would be an encyclopedia of encyclopedias, which I'm sure you could find a better wiki of wiki projects. But there's lots of wikis. For instance, a Pokemon Go wiki probably exists. Not that I have it bookmarked or read it during the show, but probably a thing. Actually, Nine Inch Nails. There's a Nine Inch Nails wiki, right? So, so wikis can be created in all of these very narrow areas. The interesting thing about WikiLeaks is this idea that it was started with of creating a powerful tool on the internet that would allow people to collaborate. So when you get deep into these developer conferences or freedom of information people, you talk about tools a lot because the biggest impact you can have on something at, you know, the cutting edge of technology is developing the tools to let other people jump on. You're only one person. You can only make so much stuff. And WikiLeaks was, you know, one-stop shopping. It looked like something like the Silk Road would later be. I literally almost said Silk Road, which is the Pokemon. I'm betraying what I actually use all these tools for. Get your Tor browser, check out your Bulbasaur. You know what I'm saying? Oh, God. Anyways, my point is that Julian Assange created this platform, and for everybody who used the platform or every instance in which the platform was used, his name kind of became to, you know, the lay public, sort of convoluted with all these other... Edward Snowden and Julian Assange were just sort of the same thing to people for a long time. And I think now with the Chelsea Manning story and actually some of the other stories that are covered in this documentary, finally, this isn't just one big bubble of anonymous. These people are kind of, people are recognizing who these individuals are because there are really important distinctions between what they did and, you know, what they stand for.
Well, and I think, I mean, one of the things socially when I look at the two of them that I think really can set the tone to differentiate a Snowden from an Assange is that the latter is currently dating Pamela Anderson. which I think spells it out for you. One is missing in a country of some, you know, some import. The other one is the world's baddest bad boy in the words of one Robert Ritchie, aka Kid Rock, is now dating the baddest bitch in the world.
Well, I don't keep up fully on the status of that, but I do follow Edward Snowden's girlfriend on Twitter. She takes photos.
Okay, so that's like the same difference.
So maybe we do have points to contrast here.
Well, I just think it's interesting that I think it's interesting, basically my point in all of that, is to point out that Julian Assange is the kind of person that has attained a certain celebrity, but not... He's a bad boy, but he's not like notorious in the way that like Snowden is like in a cabin and like afraid of his life for his life. You know what I mean?
This was such an important thing in distinguishing. When we talked about Citizen Four, I was, you know, I have a very open, easy to understand stance on the Snowden thing. I think it's all good, and I don't think there's any room to argue the opposite point. I think it's only done from ignorance. I don't think you can have an educated debate over is what Edward Snowden did good or bad. I think you just have people who understand privacy and surveillance and big government and other people who have just been fed like Sean Hannity talking points. I mean, just like, but he put people in jeopardy, you know, just nonsense with no basis in fact.
Sure.
So when you look at the Assange stuff and at WikiLeaks, and we talked about this a little on Citizen 4, but Assange has this wide open sort of feeling about just let all information be free.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom of information is power. You take power out of the hands of the powerful, something they got to just a little bit, I think, towards the end of the documentary. And probably if I had to take an honest guess, although who fucking knows why he attacked Clinton so much, is, hey, these are the resources I have to, you know, recalibrate power structures. So the big difference and the reason that it's so crazy in my mind that these two were linked is something that you see a little more clearly in this documentary. They didn't talk about it so much in Citizen 4. There's just so much going on. But the leaks of Snowden's material did not happen through WikiLeaks.
Right.
In fact, I guess it was a point of contention. I wish Poitras would have talked about this more. But apparently Assange screamed at her on the phone. I don't know what you got out of that, but my assumption was it was because she wouldn't give him Edward Snowden's stuff.
Probably.
Which is crazy. People just go, oh yeah, same person, these leaker people, you know, whatever. But Snowden thought the documents should be properly vetted through reporters, that the, you know, important details need to be redacted. He took a very hands-on, granular approach. Hands-on in one way, hands-off in another way, in that he went, reporters are the experts on this. We need to filter this information through them. But because Assange helped him get a jet the fuck out of Dodge,
mm-hmm.
I think that's why part of that link happens. So the trouble with Assange is there's a lot of baggage and shady stuff going on with this guy. He's not somebody you would necessarily want your cause to be. He's a very problematic figure, let's say.
Sure.
And that was another interesting thing to me is to see. I mean, I think the most interesting thing that comes out of this, if you already know the story, Alex Gibney did a documentary called We Steal Secrets. I think that covers a lot more of the, you know, just a lot more details. But Laura Poitras showing her own kind of personal side with this, something that feels to me to be very uncomfortable to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a reluctant voiceover. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I'm not supposed to be the story, but I have to. I'm sorry. Which sucks because I also feel like she probably has a lot more information that we could be getting. Like, I want to stop her and interview her as she gives a little detail like, yeah, and then Assange yelled at me. Anyways, next scene, I'm like, hold on. Well, about what? What's going on there? What are you guys fighting about? Like, you know. At the heart of this, you have this figure who is going through some kind of PR rehabilitation or not, or doesn't want to do that.
Right.
And I think, in my mind, that's the most interesting part of this documentary, aside from, say, you know, here's a bunch of stuff about news reports, right?
Right.
Or here is the background of WikiLeaks. What do you feel like, what is your impression of Assange? How is that different now than, say, before you watch this?
I think for me, the moment when my opinion on Julian Assange shifted was that fucking weird scene where Lady Gaga interviewed him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I was like, watching it, and what's the first thing she asks? Like, what's his favorite candy or
favorite food? Yeah.
Yeah. And he starts to answer and then catches himself being a human and goes, wait, hold on just a second. First off, let me start off. I'm not a normal person.
Right.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure you almost just said pizza, but yeah. I guess sure.
Right, right. Well, because as a figure, he's somebody who he has this problem. And the whole reason he's in fucking exile, when you look at Snowden being on the run or the things that Chelsea Manning went to prison for, you're talking about the very reason that their cause is notable. They put themselves on the line. They are wanted people, or were at some point wanted people in Chelsea Manning's case. Because they said, at my own personal expense, I'm going to basically be a martyr for this cause.
Sure.
That whatever happens to me happens, but this needs to get out.
Well, and
that's
and
not
it's,
why Assange is hiding.
Right. That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he, I feel like, you know, in what you were saying, he is constantly trying to recalibrate and not make it about him because, you know, Snowden did the same thing. We saw him tell Greenwald and Poitras in Citizen 4, I don't want the stories to be about me, probably because he saw what was going on with Julian Assange. And that's what they do. They attack the character of the person when they can't say anything about the fucking ridiculous,
right,
you know, spying reports. When all the stuff is just leaked and it's literally the documents, it's really hard to go, well, hold on, that's spin. You know, it's like the fucking, right. That's the power of WikiLeaks is it's the fucking documents themselves. So, you know, I think Snowden was really smart in how you see an honest look at that. I think Assange, we're watching somebody who's constantly battling, oh, they're going to ask me about those two women I maybe raped. I really don't want to talk about that today. And the organization going like, well, he built all of this, but he maybe raped those two women and everyone's going to fucking ask about that. I mean, what do you fucking do if you're this guy? Is he making, so let's put aside the fact that he's like a weirdo.
I mean, he's just the worst, man. Like, he's just the worst. Like, I don't necessarily equivocally disagree with his cause, but just like, he's just the worst in a lot of ways.
Tell me about that.
I don't know. It's one of those things where like, I'm just going to keep using Kid Rock as... as kind of an analogy, because I think it's effective. It's like if Kid Rock were to put out a new song and you listen to it and didn't know it was Kid Rock, and you're like, this is pretty good. Who is this? And then you look it up and you're like, oh, son of a fucking bitch. That's how I feel anytime like WikiLeaks like causes waves or does anything that I think, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with the ideology of the freedom, the absolute freedom of the information. I think that there is probably a very small gray line with something like, let's say a good example historically would be D-Day. Let's say WikiLeaks was around in the 1940s and WikiLeaks in its infinite desire to release all information was like, yo, Normandy, you're about to get invaded.
Right.
That to me is probably the thin gray line between like the absolute freedom and the dark secrets.
Well, that's definitely where people, when they have the criticisms of Snowden, that's more like...
That's where you point at it.
They basically go, now our enemy knows where we are, which is not what any of the documents
right
do or say.
Sure.
It's specifically what they don't do, but that's what people are afraid of.
In the defense of doing so, Assange does make it very clear that he's not on a side. You know, he's not out to just divulge the United States secrets.
Right.
And if there is a certain, if information is absolutely free, all of it globally, knowing who's going to invade Normandy at what time probably has little bearing on, you know, I just feel it to me. It's like, if you're playing a game of war, the card game, face up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, yeah, someone's going to win, but it's literally the cards you were dealt. That's how it's going to play out. There's no element of surprise. There's no strategy. You can look at it. You can do the math and go, you win this one without ever even starting the game. You basically run a sim.
This is one of the most interesting things. I had intended in my head not to do this, and the documentary sort of pushes us. I wanted to play into the documentary's game, and the documentary tries to make itself about a conflicted person. And I always, we've talked about this a little on the show, but you and I have talked about this. I always find ideas a more satisfying conversation than gossip, you know? Than just conversations about figures. What did those figures stand for? And that's a lot of sort of the metaphor of the movie, or a thing that it at least tries to pry open, is Assange constantly going back to, you know, you can't stop an idea. This is about an idea. It's about an idea. in this way, in almost this gaslighting sort of sense, in this way where he's just trying to project that reality into truth, when the actual truth is that he's probably held the cause of WikiLeaks back because he is a person and he has baggage and people are interested in human stories. Film is interested in human stories and baggage. And so there's this war between larger ideas and the central figures who themselves are very human. And in this conversation, as much as I always try and go back to, yeah, but what about this Assange character? The broader ideas of what WikiLeaks stands for, or any of, you know, what these individuals did, be it Manning or Snowden, or Reality Winner, right? I mean, any of these people, the ideas are more important to me. They're just so much more, and my gut instinct is to constantly go back to that. It's a conflict I have the whole time I'm watching Risk. And I think if you're going to find a large idea in Risk, it is the very concept of that war of, you know, are ideas held back by the human meat sacks who have to put them forward, right?
Well, and yeah, I mean, obviously, man,
to go back to the ghost in the shell.
Right, I was going to say, we are quickly approaching a glorious transition here.
Slow burn it. We got a minute.
Well, I just think, I mean, one of the things that you have to identify let's put it this way, in Julian Assange's, in the universe he claims to want to build, right? Because I don't honestly believe him just because I think he's a dick. And he wrote Cowboy, which is not that, it's not a country song. And so I don't know why you get to just pretend you're Southern rock all of a sudden.
I don't think that's the same guy. I think maybe.
What is a ba wa ta ba?
I also think maybe he's just been living in a single building so long that he has lost his perspective.
It's possible, yeah.
You know, what you were talking about with this gray line, when you get to, you know, I think we could both kind of stand here and go, well, like, yeah, maybe don't give away all the military bases. But when Clinton and Trump are going at each other,
yeah,
those are figurative military. There was a war happening and the United States fucking lost it. And it was an information war. And we lost it because of propaganda. I mean, we lost because of a lot of reasons, but propaganda being one and WikiLeaks
presidents
falling.
Being the other. Stay tuned later on Double Feature. I look at it. I look at the idea of fully free information on a global scale. And when all the pieces are there and you know what they all are and you know where they all are, ready, here it comes, there is, you have to reassess the variables, because when secrets are no longer a variable and when the element of surprise is a non-starter, you have one variable and it's people.
Ghost in the Shell, a film from 1995. As you mentioned, a highly influential film with we're going to get stuck back in ideas. So I'd like to take a moment to say a nonchalant use of over-the-top gore, which I very much appreciate.
And an absolutely disgusting lack of affection for how deeply it builds the world it plays around in.
Oh, I know.
That's, it's just like the panning shots, like the establishing shots. I'm like, wait, hold on.
right.
Is this the whole movie?
There's a whole person whose entire job was just weapons designer for this movie.
God.
I mean, it's crazy. It's the amount of detail that goes into it is nuts. And you're right. They're just like, let's play a little story here. Okay, gotta go. You're like, you mean this is the start of like a 15
Jesus Christ,
right? Yeah. Yeah, if only we could just scoop it up and make some kind of live action Matrix-y type The Matrix.
I see what you're saying, but I would wager you could make an entire career out of it.
So back when we talked about the Wachowskis and The Matrix, you know, we are very, I'm just going to say, ignorant of anime on this show.
Sure.
And it's
It's not for lack of y'all trying, patrons.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Right. And well, I think we're both very, for some strange reason, it's just kind of not where we eat, but we're both always very impressed with it. And especially the people who listen to this show, they know the steps. They know the good stuff. They're not starting us out on deep cuts, except that one time we did Skycrawler. So that was a little bit of a deep cut there.
I think that's a big one. I don't know. Well, again, I'm hiding behind my naivety. I don't know.
Ghost in the Shell, there was a 2.0 version that came out, which is their cyber techno way of saying we...
Redux, which is what you say when you're redoing Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Redux.
We changed some of the business in here. Mm-hmm. We shined up some of the nipples in this movie. We made it a little different. Mm. And, there'll be plenty of talk about nipples. Don't you worry.
Good.
Okay, down nipples, should they have them? Should they not?
Let me just scroll my note further down.
Yeah, please. Skip down to the nips for me.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's, we're going to keep doing the show like it's 1995. Like Basic Instinct is in the theater and there are no problems and the world is still okay. So we didn't talk about this much on the Matrix show. And I think there's some things about it that are broadly influential to the Wachowskis, who were then influential to everyone fucking alive in the last years of the 90s and probably the next 5 years that followed were just heavily, heavily Matrix influenced. So there's some broad things, and then there's literally like some Tarantino style, just like, I like this scene, let's put this in the Matrix, you know, like, oh, Jack's in the neck. I have those in the Matrix.
Yeah.
just, you know, scoop them up and put them in there. And I think all that's fine. I'm also very on record with just like, take things from Argento movies and just put them in your...
I mean,
it's fine.
I'm just very on record with, if you're about to say anything negative about the Matrix, I just have to disagree. That's where I stand.
Those sequels.
They have big sequels? Fan of those.
Okay, yeah. Thought I was going to catch you in a little Matrix trap there. But
still haven't seen them. Michael's going strong.
Michael's still taking the blue pill on those sequels. Is what's going on there? Shit, was that the wrong pill? Whatever, you get the joke. That was a joke that I believe was good enough that people will excuse that I got the pill wrong, but it's fine. But yeah, listen, I just want to talk about the ridiculous amount of nudity in this. I want to talk about the post-humanism parts, the gender and sexuality stuff. I mean, that's the stuff that to me today is everybody's going to look at this and see the cyberpunk stuff and see the techno stuff, and they're going to get, you know, I think those are the parts you just watch it and you go, oh yeah, it was amazing here. And then everybody ran with these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same as when we did Akira.
Yeah.
You could see a lot of
Akira.
I know. And you could see a lot of the influence there. But what I don't think this movie gets enough credit for is the things that it's really trying to do. It's kind of look at consciousness and it's look at, you know, what makes something or someone human. And a conversation that I feel like is relevant today, we haven't had a post-humanism talk in a while, but I feel like is relevant today as we look at, we could have just as easily done this in a double feature about, you know, gender fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment, maybe wicked ahead of its time in the 90s, but the treatment of a character that is in a genre that's hypersexual, very aware of nudity and sexuality, and a character that is so like fucking quintessentially female, but also genderless at the same time, is just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's just like the movie opens too, doing the same thing where it's just like, look at all of these female parts. This is not a girl. Look at her parts. Look at her fucking parts. Not a girl. Joke about menstruation. This is not a woman. It's just like, and you know, it eases off the gas a little bit, but man, does it just hit that stuff home.
I think that, I mean, that is to me, you know, so I think I need to say something on the show about a thing that I've been saying off the show a lot recently, which is that I have few regrets with Double Feature, but we did the Congress too early.
Oh, you have been talking about the Congress a lot. Yeah.
And I think that I see a lot of, again, not done necessarily as articulately because I don't think it's the focus, but I see a lot of it's what you were saying about post-humanism. It's this idea that, and I mean, fuck, this is 1995, man. The Congress was 2013. You know, the Congress is 5 years ago.
That's a smudge. That says deep state, not deep fakes. That's a difference.
Yeah.
your notes are a little fucked there.
But it's like in 1995, you have somebody going, you know, eventually it's going to look like a girl and it won't be.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, eventually gender is basically just not a thing. Because when you look at, I think that gender is the beginning of a conversation that nobody is ever willing to have because they're too busy wondering what they would look like as a boy on Facebook. but once we get beyond that socially, I think that there is a greater conversation about, this is going to seem nihilistic because it is, I guess, how little your identity actually matters in general.
Yeah.
And I think Ghost in the Shell, honestly, either it fell backwards or it was ahead of its game in the conversation about gender identity is just an easy one because it's been binary for so long that to have somebody that exhibits, you know, they fulfill the check boxes and then at the bottom you just go, not girl. And it should rattle people in 1995.
I think we're
beyond that a little bit conversationally. I think a lot of people are more willing to swallow the red pill there. But I think...
Metaphor lost on me, as I pointed out earlier in the show. I don't know which pill we're swallowing.
The blue pill is the red pill makes you go through the mirror. You were right with your color choice. You nailed it.
Pro tip, if you see me at a party, I will swallow whatever pill you give me. So just that's a good thing to know, I guess.
I love the sort of posthumanist argument that goes into just that first scene where it's to go back to the end of the conversation about risk. It's looking at the variables. It's tightening the variables. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this is something nobody likes to admit because unfortunately we're all people, but people kind of suck biologically.
Yeah.
And I think that the biological flaws exist in a mental place too, and psychological places. And I think that it is probably foolish to pretend that this is how humanity is going to be.
Well, I'm in a spot where we dodge
this meaning you and I, not this meaning Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just being clear.
No, I mean, as we have these conversations and increasingly just don't have them out of sheer fucking fatigue about just anything around me too.
Sure.
I always feel in such a minority because I just wish we would get to the post-gender thing faster.
Yes.
This all seems like a...
God, fucking yes.
Like, yeah, tear down the patriarchy. Hi, I want to live in a world where you can't do that.
Yeah.
Where that doesn't even fucking make sense. That sentence does not even fucking compute. And we're way too far away.
This is kind of what I always say about the Congress. Go back and listen to our show about the Congress. Also, this is not a Congress spoiler. But I'm just like, I'm prepared for the point socially where like... Instead of going, I'm a boy or a girl, or I'm trans, or I'm non-binary, or I'm asexual, or even the point where you're past it, like you're saying, it's just like a non-conversation because it's just like an arbitration that we have finally weeded out of our language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking forward to like what I see as the logical conclusion, which is like when you go like, I'm Eric 13 and I just go, I'm a cartoon cactus. And that's just acceptable.
I see. You've seen me at my 100 years in the future and you've gone 10 times that.
Right. That's what I mean.
I don't like the concept of you being able to differentiate me from anything else that's moving, breathing or not on the planet at any...
Kind of. I just think...
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't want our molecules to be fucking... Get out of here.
I mean...
Get
out of here. So I think kind of where I'm going, and this is weird because I still definitely eat dead animal meat. But
this show is all over the place today.
No, it's great. It's great.
Just no.
It's everywhere I want to be.
All right.
I feel like it's just all of this is about humans and the prospect of maybe clones or cyborgs or androids are a logical next step.
That's funny because I thought it was about veganism and two-factor authentication.
I just think it's really interesting. I think I've been thinking a lot about speciesism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's definitely a good conversation that we will not have today. But also what goes along with that and what goes along with me on sort of my, you know, mental path on human beings. And this is weird, but I think like I can see things that just make logical sense, right? Like I think it's silly to operate like eventually people are just going to stop eating meat, right? It's definitely going to happen. Like eventually no one will eat meat anymore.
Sure.
That seems like, it just seems like a definite reality to me.
Earth will force it on us if nothing else.
Well, and so what's weird about that is I still do it. Even though I know it's inevitability and probably even within my lifetime, I'm like, people go, are you vegan? And my answer isn't no, it's just not yet.
Yeah.
Why? And that is why we should all be androids instead, because people are dumb and we're like incapable of just going like, maybe I'll just have a veggie burger forever.
Well, this is personally something that just gets to me, is that I've always lived in extremes. I think it's just kind of an addictive personality thing, although a topic for another show. But
let me make a note to put speciesism next to an addictive personality movie.
Oh, great. When I can detect where something is going, that's the part of futurism that's always appealed to me and something I've always felt I was pretty good at.
Mm-hmm.
But when I can see a path to where things are going, I don't want to be on the old path anymore.
Mm-hmm. I can vouch for you being that person. You were that person for me, like in a lot of ways.
I mean, yeah. I just, you know, it was watching movies digitally on our show back when that was like, some people just dig their heels in the sand on that stuff, or electric car stuff. It's just,
well, I mean,
autonomous driving.
To go back 10 years, I think atheism.
Yeah.
It's just an obvious thing.
Remember when people believed in God in the United States?
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, just shit like that.
That was something that used to get us hate mail, and at least at this point, everyone's either given up or I don't know.
Right.
I don't know what's going on there. But you know, we kind of see these trends of where things are going, and the gender one is so interesting to me because, you know, I'm submitting for a lot of film festivals and stuff now, and they're really interested in all these conversations. And I always put down non-gender conforming, even though I'm a way heterosexual way male. There's nothing even interesting about me in sexuality or gender in any regard. I used to have a little bit of an androgyny thing going, but I'm not even sure in my 30s if I can claim like keeping that up. So I'm just really boring in those respects. And that's my, where you have veganism like that. That's kind of where I'm at, where I'm just like,
sure,
yeah, this is how I play into gender right now, even though I can clearly see a world where we don't have genders and wish we could get there. I somehow can't get there. And I think that's a conversation that when you talk to people about post-humanism, some people want to talk about the robot that can open doors and looks like a dog or whatever. And some people want to talk about how we're seeing post-humanism right now. There's sort of that envisioning the zombie apocalypse, you know, the robot overlords kind of talking about that.
Sure, and consciousness uploading.
Yeah. Which, I mean, there's some merit to some of those conversations, but I'm interested in the parts of it we're seeing right now. And those are the parts that I think Ghost in the Shell talks about when they look at, you know, the fact that they live in a world without gender, or really the absence of sexuality, seems like a natural step towards post-human, towards not needing a physical body, or towards a world, but this is another one that's always interesting to me, is a world that doesn't need humans. I think I think society will be post-human before people are because of identity, you know, and that probably ties us in another way back to the Assange thing and just keeping it about people is we will want to have, you know, we already see this in society. We want to break it up into 50 genders, whereas the...
You start plotting lines on a graph, man, you know?
The most popular consciousness debate about gender in American society was over bathrooms, which was mostly solved by going, whatever, unisex bathrooms, move on.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, as humans, we went, no, let's come up with 45 more ways of defining gender.
Which is just, I mean, you know, let's go back to the digital film conversation. Like, how many genders before it's just a blurred line of it's all the same thing?
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, how many pixels before you no longer see pixels and instead it's just Willem Dafoe fucking getting his dick hit with a iron?
Spoiler, I guess not if you don't mention the movie. Also, how many Willem Dafoe movies have that happen? Could be a lot of them, really. Let's be honest. Yeah, so in the world of Ghost in the Shell, we start to see these ideas about, well, what that, where we want to talk about consciousness uploading, we can look at the society, the far-reaching society that they've built in the film, and go, well, they're living in an intermediate step that much more closely resembles our world today than it did in the 90s. But in some intermediate step between now and no longer needing physical organs. And so we can look at that half step world that they live in. And I think it's so interesting the way that when sexuality started to disappear, gender started to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And also that there's still commentary about gender in it, which is fascinating to me. I think, you know, half of that is the movie wanting to be able to talk a little bit about what it's doing with gender. She makes the comment about menstruation early on, or about her time of the month, and I think she says something else. And the fact that that joke would appear in a society, but the crux of the joke is that it does not exist, that it's referring to, you know, a construct that isn't there. It's really making a joke more at the audience. It's like using the rules of real world for one person to make a jab at another person in a society where that almost doesn't even make sense as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that it plays with that throughout the movie is, I think, the fascinating part that doesn't get picked up. Those parts of losing identity and losing, you know, what it really, God, I hesitate to say means to be human, because we know that's, well, anytime you do this, that's what you're talking about.
I think that maybe a better phrase is what it means to be alive.
Yes, thank you.
Because, you know, whatever, humans... The definition is less specific.
Sure. Well, and
or more, I don't know.
You know, when we get to a spot, this is another big idea thing. I don't really have anything specifically to say about it, other than that the movie's kind of a meditation about these things. It opens a lot of kind of strings of thought. It's such a great launching off piece for other movies to be influenced by, because it opens a lot of these ideas. Something like The Matrix that could go into saying, well, you know, if you're not living in the real world, would you rather have a world that is pleasant but fictional than real? And what does a real world even mean then? You know, I feel like The Matrix did a lot of tangible things with some of the plot threads that this opened. But one that will become relevant to us at some point in the future of humanity is, will we care about the fact that we're over being alive? At some point, you know, autonomy, I think, is some of the first steps of that, or things like, you know, driverless cars.
Sure.
That's one of those things, moving towards a workforce that is completely automated. And a question like, what do human beings do for work in 100 years? Do we have work in 100 years? Are we on basic incomes? Or is that a failed socioeconomic theory? And does society even survive not being able to work? And these are questions that don't get talked about in broad circles very much, but I mean, 10% of the workforce is about to become out of jobs. That's going to happen pretty fucking quick, and people don't think about it. But it's, mm-hmm. you know, one of the biggest players in driverless cars.
Truck
is
drivers?
Uber. Yeah, but I was going to say Uber's actually in developing the technology, which is crazy. See, truck drivers, that's a thing where like, okay, so Tesla has a truck now, mm-hmm. and the truck is of course going to be one of the first driverless trucks. And of course, companies are going to want to adapt that. But that happens, even though I think it'll happen way more rapidly than we're ready for, it'll happen on a gradual scale. We'll get to see those jobs disappear.
Mm-hmm.
If Uber has self-driving cars, I don't know why they wouldn't just fire everyone overnight and completely replace. There's a couple of reasons we could really get into debating about the rollout. But I mean, it's going to happen pretty fucking quick.
Right.
The question is kind of just like, will people, you know, how fast can we do it without people not using Uber because they're afraid? And once you get past that question, I mean, I don't know how it is in Austin, but in LA, Uber is the new waiting tables. I mean, everybody out here fucking Ubers.
Yep.
Most of the people I know are going to lose their side or main gig, you know, the day that that happens, and unemployment's going to go up dramatically. And I actually think these are really good moves for the future of society, because I don't think we should be, you know, paying 100 people to mow the lawn by cutting one blade of grass at a time. So if we have jobs that can be automated, go for it. But we're seeing this in stores and the big Amazon store now that doesn't have any people that work in it and all of that stuff. And so when one of these things after another happens, we're already questioning, what does it mean to be human? 100 years ago, you absolutely defined yourself by your job. That is not going to be the case. It might not be the case now. We'll mm-hmm. be that much less the case in 5 years. And one after another, I think these are the types of things. These are the bits of identity that are disappearing.
Until you're a cartoon cactus.
We have a website. It's doublefeature.fm. We have an email address, doublefeatureshow@icloud.com. And I want to give a personal thank you to at least John, Billy Wilson, and Patrick Klein. Vamp for me while I get my mouse working, and we'll see who else it is.
Cool. Next week on the show, it's not going to get easier. I mean, it'll get a little less heady, but it's definitely, we're going to walk right into precarious waters when we try and decide I'm not going to tell you which two, but two American societies that are the same, but also hate each other.
That was also Patrick Klein, Tony Gleed, and Donald Muzzy, who are with Deshelle Shapiro, I should say, are some, what do we call these people? Showrunners? Is that what we call them?
That's fine.
These people help make the show happen, and you too can help make the show happen.
Bono?
At patreon.com/
Paul Hewson?
Double feature.
Paul Hewson can help make this show happen?
And you too, Paul Hewson. To make the show happen. What are the actual movies that are going to lead to this conversation?
We are going to do a Robert Altman movie called Nashville. And then we're going to pair that with a film from 1983. It's a tough one to find, but it's worth looking. It's called Wild Style.
Until then, live deliciously.
And watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.